Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today we're going to be talking about a subject that people are starting to learn about, but very few people have known for a very long time. And my guest name is Craig Kendall, and he's lived this, so he has a lot to say about it. And Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Craig, you have written a few books. So first, let's talk a little bit about who Craig is, and then why did you write the books, and then we're going to go into the big topic of what your books are all about.
Okay. Well, I'm a parent of a child who has a form of autism. It's a high-functioning form of autism called Asperger's syndrome, and he is a teenager now. He's doing pretty well, thank God. But it wasn't always that way, and it took a long time for my wife and I to actually get a correct diagnosis so we really understood why he had the kind of challenges he had in his life. And it took a long time to find a good therapist and to get him into the right type of kind of training and social skills classes that he needed. And because of the years it took us and the frustration and the kind of anxiety and trauma we went through, I really felt that I didn't want other parents to have to walk blindly down the same path that I had to walk down and my wife had to walk down, where we were pretty much starting from scratch. And once we finally got a diagnosis of Asperger's for our son, we did, like I think many parents do, you kind of looked at various books and bought books and searched the internet. And a lot of the information that we found was somewhat useful, but it tended to be written by therapists and PhDs and doctors, and there's a lot of kind of clinical terms and kind of jargony terms, and they sort of assumed a relatively high level of knowledge. And we were very much newbies. We didn't even know what this thing was. We didn't know how to pronounce it. So, years later, I had volunteered. My wife, we had talked to a lot of different people, and our therapist had referred others to call us and talk to us. And a lot of people had said, gee, why don't you write a book on this? You have so much knowledge about it now. Because I'm kind of one of those people who used to own a market research firm, and I literally had done surveys of other parents. Because, in a way, aren't parents the best people to tell you what works and what doesn't work? If you're going to buy a car, I guess you could go out and you could look at, Motor Trend, and you could buy Kelley Blue Book and all these kind of technical evaluations. But think about when you buy a car. You ask your neighbor, your cousin, your uncle, your buddy, your brother who has a car, and say, hey, what do you think of that car? You have one. How do you like it? And I think that the best advice anybody can get is from another parent. So I pretty much wrote these books to help parents, and they're written in a very straightforward manner from the perspective of a parent, and they're very, very pragmatic. They're not very theoretical. They're just, how do you help your kid?
But that's really important, Craig, to write them like that, because like you said, a lot of books that are written have got all these technical terms, which to me is just a way to not let people know what's really going on. And your books, I read them. They're actually very good, and I really think it.
Well, thank you.
For people who have children, with anything actually, not just the Asperger's, but anything, your books would help, because a lot of children today have been labeled with a lot of different, let's say, terms, because they can't really diagnose it, because this isn't a disease, and if you're going to diagnose
Correct.
It with a disease, that means it's got to be a cure, but there isn't a cure. And a lot of parents, I don't think, understand that this is not the worst possible thing that their child could have. So the way you wrote the book is really very, very good, because it answers a lot of questions. A lot of people will go to doctors and say, my child is, acting this way, that way, and that way. Doctors will take a look and they'll go, oh, they probably have blah, 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 and this is what they need to be on. But not every medication that has been given to children will go for every child that comes, but that's how they kind of done things lately, I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were having, your thoughts about what to do, what were some of the symptoms that your son exhibited that maybe parents need to know to be looking for or to, kind of pay attention to?
Sure. The kind of you know, classic things. I think my son had, you know, what I might call, you know, the kind of classic symptoms. There were things like being very regimented, really, really, really needing to stick to routine, and any deviation from routine would cause a complete meltdown. For example, I tell this story that when my wife would drive our children to elementary school, and when my son was really young, thinking like second grade or whatever, one time my wife had to stop somewhere on the way, stop at a drugstore or something, or cleaners. So she went a different route to the school. When she finally got to the school, he had a complete fit. He just, because she had taken a different path, and you would think, well, gee, a kid who's only in first or second grade, how could he even recognize what street she drove down? But it was a deviation from routine, and he had such a fit and such a meltdown that she literally had to drive back home, start in the driveway, and then drive back to the school, because he kept telling her, you're going down the wrong road. And even though they got to the school, it was irrelevant. She took a different path, and that just completely threw him for a loop. So, you know, one of the characteristics, very common characteristic of kids who have autism and Asperger's is that they tend to really need routine. They like things to go exactly the same way. They don't like any deviation from schedule. Another very common characteristic of kids on Asperger's is sensitivities. Sensitivities to smell, to sound, to light, to feel. My son, to this day, doesn't really wear long-sleeve shirts, even though he's 16 now. Really just can't stand having cloth on his arm. Still can't stand that. And when he was a kid, he would have an absolute fit over clothes. You just couldn't get him to wear a lot of things. And one of the things that parents told me, and I pass this on in my books, is a bunch of parents said, oh, yes, boy, that's the truth. That's my child to a T. What I do is I go to thrift stores and I buy used children's clothes because they've been washed so many times that they're a lot softer. And I find that my child does much, much better when I dress him or her in, you know, clothes I got from the thrift store. Plus, it saves me some money. Other parents told me, oh, yeah, if I buy, like, jeans, I have to wash them 20 times before the first time he can put them on. He cannot wear jeans until after they've been washed, like, 20 times. So these are just some of the kind of practical tips that I learned over time and kind of included in my books.
Which, again, I think is very important. Now, you talk about how Asperger's and autism are kind of the same, but they're not totally the same. So it's often confused. And so what are, like, the differences between the Asperger's syndrome versus the behavior of autism?
Well, Asperger's is, if you're a therapist, technically in the kind of in the arena of therapists, et cetera, Asperger's is a form of autism. But autism is called a spectrum disorder, which, what does that mean? Well, let me explain that. What it means is you can have autism quite severely, showing lots of very severe symptoms, in which case you're usually defined as low functioning and you get the label of autism. Or you can go to the other end of the spectrum and have a very, very mild case of autism, where pretty much you would barely know somebody has autism at all, and that is either referred to as high-functioning autism or Asperger's syndrome. With kids who are labeled as having autism, about 30% of them are also categorized as being mentally retarded because their IQ is so low. Many people who have autism will never be able to have a job. They'll never be able to live on their own. They'll never really be able to be what they call mainstreamed in school. They could only be taught kind of one-on-one with tutors because their autism is so severe that they really can't function in society as an independent person. And with a lot of therapy and a lot of skills training, they can get a lot better. But at the very low end, those children, I think, are what a lot of people think about when they think of autistic kids. And that's relatively easy to diagnose. I mean, by the time a child is 2 or 3, it's pretty obvious that that child is autistic, because many of them are what they call nonverbal. They'll never speak in their entire life, or their speech is extremely, extremely limited. They only speak a few words, or they're years behind the normal development for speaking. Now, on the other hand, if you take Asperger's syndrome, those children many times are, for some unknown reason, above average intelligence, way above average IQ. Many times they're straight A students in school, and because of that, it's very difficult to get diagnosed. People don't think there's anything necessarily wrong, and many of these kids aren't diagnosed until they're in third, fourth, fifth grade, even in high school, when the characteristics of Asperger's, which are, a lot of them are just extremely poor social skills, that's one of the biggest characteristics, when those become so obvious that people say, you know, something's really wrong with John or Mary, she's just not fitting in at all. And there's been probably characteristics throughout their whole lives, but people just label them as quirky or unusual, or, you know, an egghead, a geek, things like this. And you know, I'm 52. When I was in junior high school, Asperger's syndrome wasn't even a diagnosed term. You couldn't even be diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome in those days. But yet, I bet everybody in my generation probably knows somebody, looking back, who had Asperger's. And the classic label they were given was, you know, the bookworm, the nerd, the kid who was clueless socially, wore high water pants, did straight A's in school, but you know, never had a date, didn't understand how to dress, didn't comb his hair, the classic uncoordinated kind of geeky egghead. And those characteristics are classic for somebody with Asperger's syndrome. And one of the books that I recently just come out with has just been published actually in this month, the month of May. It's called Thriving in Adulthood with Asperger's Syndrome, because there are hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of adults who never got diagnosed or got diagnosed when they were 30, 40, even 50, and they never had any kind of training, never had any kind of therapy, and they've struggled their entire lives with how do you get a job, how do you keep a job, how do you have relationships, how do you communicate with other people, and these people have really had a tough time. But the nice thing is, everybody can do really well. Everybody can have rich, fulfilling relationships in their lives. It takes a little bit of skills training. It takes a little bit of social skills training. It takes a little bit of therapy. But with the right kind of training and help, anybody can really have a very successful, fulfilling career and a loving relationship in their life.
Well, I mean, take, for example, Bill Gates. You know, he has Asperger's. He's, you know, people have talked to him about it, and he has outwardly admitted that that's what he's had. You know, and, you know, he's considered to be a genius. And so it's not that they can't learn or they won't learn. They just learn a little bit differently. Now, is there a different way of learning between the girls and the boys if they have the syndrome?
That's a very, very good question. For whatever reason, about 4 boys are diagnosed with Asperger's for every 1 girl that's diagnosed. And I'm not a doctor, and I'm not a therapist, and I'm not a researcher, so I won't venture guess why that's the case, except that I can just repeat to you what I read and what I understand. One of the things is that the way girls are socialized, at least in America, girls tend to be somewhat more social creatures. They are a little bit more cooperative. They're not quite as competitive. And girls just kind of almost naturally group together into kind of small groupings when they're young. And there is kind of a belief that it may be the case that there was just as many girls with Asperger's as boys, but because of the way women and girls almost naturally are more communicative, girls learn through their friends, or they learn through their sisters or their cohorts, they kind of learn social skills a little bit more easily than boys. Boys tend to be kind of rough and competitive, and they make their friends on the baseball field or the basketball court. And unfortunately, another characteristic of people with Asperger's is they tend to be have what they call fine motor skills issues. They're challenged with handwriting, a lot of times very uncoordinated, and that tends to hurt boys more than girls, because boys get a lot of self-respect and, you know, who gets picked on the playground to be on one team or the other. A very uncoordinated boy, that can really isolate him, where those same issues don't isolate girls quite as much or as badly. So in terms of, you know, skills training for girls and for boys, they're pretty much the same. There really shouldn't be the traits that girls have, that their deficits are really identical to the deficits that boys have. They tend to really ultimately need social skills training, communications training, understanding things like, you know, what are the subtleties of speech, like what is sarcasm, a nuanced sentence, just tone and inflection of voice. Asperger's people usually are oblivious to the change in tone in your voice. So if you say, "I am doing it," they don't realize that there was an emphasis on the "am" and that the person might be showing some type of perhaps annoyance or that emphasis in there. They're completely oblivious to that. They literally take what you say classically, literally and word for word. So irrespective of where the emphasis is in the sentence, they don't pick up on that emphasis at all. And even if they kind of hear that there's an emphasis, they have no clue that emphasis changes to some extent the meaning of the sentence. So that type of communication skills training is identically needed for both boys and girls.
Which I think is pretty important. And there is, but girls learn, like you said, differently than boys do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there are a lot of people that realize that, and it's not because they have, you know, Asperger's syndrome or anything. It's just that's kind of the way it is. Now, there are a lot of medications out there floating around.
Mm-hmm.
So are there medications that work that are, you know, pretty effective, or is there a variable? How does that work?
Well, I want to really emphasize that I'm not a physician or doctor at all. My understanding, there's only one prescription medication that's actually been approved for Asperger's, and that's Abilify. But in general, if you understand, let's talk about what autism is. If you have autism, you do not have a disease. A disease implies that you can cure it. You can't cure autism, and Asperger's is a form of autism. It can't be cured. What it is your brain is physically different. Your brain is just wired differently. That's all there is to it. It's just the way you're born, and that's just how your brain is. Now, drugs, let's talk about where drugs could help some people. Let's say you have you're manic depressant. You have bipolar syndrome. Well, a person with bipolar syndrome actually has a chemical imbalance in their brain, and that chemical imbalance causes them to swing between kind of elation at one time and depression at another time. By taking certain types of medications, whether it's, you know, risperidone or Abilify or whatever, you know, Depakote, whatever kind of prescription medications they take, those medications actually do something physical to somebody who has bipolar, and that actually changes the brain chemistry. And the symptoms pretty much are either eliminated completely or tremendously helped. Depression goes away or the anxiety goes away. This doesn't work for Asperger's or autism. The problem with autism are things like sensitivity to touch, to smell, fixation on one topic to the exclusion of all others, complete lack of understanding of really nuanced speech and how the language works. There is no medication whatsoever that in any way, shape, or form helps with any of these symptoms. Now, some kids with Asperger's and this happens a lot, most parents will tell you this happens to their children, they have a lot of meltdowns, they get really upset, they have a lot of anger issues, they don't concentrate well. This is what I always tell people. There's a root cause for all of these issues. A meltdown is the result. It is not a causal element. Something caused a child to melt down. They were overwhelmed by commotion, too much noise in the classroom. There might have been a fire engine outside. Who knows what? Something changed in their routine. Their parents had an argument that day. They moved to a new neighborhood or whatever. Something changed, and it's causing these meltdowns. Now, if a child is upset and you medicate them, you may be able to, I'm not a fan of medication, so I'm trying to find a polite way to say this, but you might be able to, like, numb up a kid by giving them medications, but you're not solving any autistic problem by giving a kid medication. Now, I've discussed this with many authors and many therapists and things. Now, there are some kids who are so bouncing off the walls for whatever environmental reason that it's very difficult to get them to even focus long enough to give them social skills training, for example. So they give them some type of a medication to kind of typically just calm them down and mellow them out enough so that they can focus on studying in school and just make it through the school day. But you have to recognize that medications for autistic people don't solve any problems. They may mask a resulting symptom, but there's nothing that can be solved by taking a prescription medication, in my opinion at least. It's not like you have cancer or something. It's not like you have a cold and you take penicillin and it actually, you know, kills bacteria in your system and your cold goes away. It doesn't work that way.
Is there a difference between ADD, ADHD, and Asperger's syndrome?
Yeah, they're completely different things. They're not even, they're totally different. They're not the same at all. I mean, they're completely, totally different. So, you know, somebody who has attention deficit disorder, okay? Mm-hmm. If you have Asperger's or autism, your brain is wired a certain way. Now, one of the things that you often have kids misdiagnosed as having ADHD who have Asperger's. This is unfortunately extremely common. This is because you can't give a blood test or something like that, a CAT scan, an X-ray. None of these things will identify autism because autism is the way your brain is wired. Nothing can tell you how your brain is wired except for watching and observing a person's behavior. So the classic way that kids with Asperger's are diagnosed is, you know, the parents sit down with a therapist, a doctor, a neurologist, a primary care physician, a psychiatrist, and they just talk for a while. You know, what are the characteristics of Jimmy? The psychiatrist talks to Jimmy, and he sees that Jimmy has a very pedantic or, you know, very kind of adult way of speaking, and the kid's only six. Or all the kid will focus on is Lego toys or, trains. And they ask the parents, gee, your child's 12 years old. How many friends does he have? And the parents say, well, actually, he's never had a friend in his whole life, which is a classic characteristic of somebody with Asperger's. So the way you diagnose Asperger's is behavioral. You look at behaviors. And that is if you look in the DMV, which is the medical journal, it pretty much says you have this diagnosis if you meet something like 5 of these 8 criteria or something like this. It's all based on observing somebody and behavioral characteristics. Now, ADHD is similar in the same respect. ADHD is all based on kind of behavior. Now, if you have a child who's bouncing off the walls in school, and they have Asperger's syndrome. And the reason they're bouncing off the wall is because school is noisy. School is too loud. The fluorescent lights, kids with Asperger's actually can see fluorescent lights flickering and it drives them berserk. They have on some kind of long sleeve shirt which is distracting them tremendously because they can feel the material just like itchy, almost like you have a wool sweater that's itching you. So this kid is being distracted by noise, by smells, by sounds, by flickering fluorescent lights, by scratchy clothes. So he's not paying attention in class. So the teacher goes to the parents and says, you know, your kid doesn't pay attention. They bring him to a doctor. The doctor spends 2 minutes with the kid, and he writes him a prescription for Ritalin and says, well, he has attention deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, he doesn't.
Yes, you see, I have a very big problem with the way they write out the prescriptions like it's candy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do. So I agree with you. There are many other ways that children can be helped other than having some prescription drugged. Not everybody, because I'm sure that there are some people that, without a doubt, it does help. But when you talk about how they're numbing them up, a lot of people that have children with ADD would rather have them numbed up than find alternatives, and that's unfortunate. When it comes to the syndrome, the Asperger syndrome, do they go through different development changes from childhood through teens through adults, or is it kind of all, you know, one kind of level of the same stuff?
No, it very, very much changes. The characteristics when kids are sort of, I almost look at it as like, if you think of it as preschool, elementary school, junior high, high school, adult, you can almost look at those stages. And the, you know, the characteristics, usually it's very rare for a kid to really be diagnosed as a preschooler because he's just a lot of times seen as kind of a quirky kid. He maybe doesn't play real well with his friends, but so what? How many preschoolers play really well with friends? And this whole concept of kind of like parallel play, you know, are you playing, if you have three kids playing in a sandbox together, are they really playing together, or are they all playing individually? They just happen to be in the same sandbox together. So it's very tough when a kid is like, before he hits school, it's very hard to really tell if a kid has Asperger's. Once he has to actually, like, sit in a chair in a classroom, pay attention to a teacher, try to do schoolwork, participate in structured activities, then you start really noticing some of the characteristics, which are kind of invisible when a kid's in preschool. A lot of kids with Asperger's, whether you're 5, 15, 25, or 55, you pretty much have the same sensitivities. You get overwhelmed easily. You have a lot of anxiety. You tend to worry about things. As a kid, you don't know how to handle that. So you just have what's the classic term is a meltdown. Just start to cry. Just start to scream. Maybe you act out. You just completely melt down. Once kids hit, like, the junior high and the high school level, those meltdowns really take a completely different type of characteristic. Kids become more, a lot of times use the term self-aware. They start becoming cognizant of the fact that they're different. They have no friends. They have no ability to date. They start feeling really lonely. They really want friends. They've tried to have friends. They've tried to invite a boy or a girl out on a date, and they've consistently failed miserably, and now they've been failing for half a dozen to a dozen years trying to do this. What happens to a lot of them is they inwardly withdraw. They get very low self-esteem. They start thinking there's something wrong with them. They start thinking they're kind of a social misfit or a freak, and they become highly depressed, and they become very withdrawn, and there you start seeing the classic case of a teenager who never leaves his room. All he ever does is play video games, has zero social life, doesn't participate in sports, doesn't participate in clubs, you know, becomes very withdrawn, very quiet. So what you start seeing here is the overwhelm that in a little kid turns into a meltdown, a lot of times in a teenager becomes depression. But it's essentially the same thing, but it's going through a different phase. The causal, I would say to people, what is the cause and then what is the result? Cause and effect. The cause is the same. No friends, not understanding language and the nuance of speech, not being able to play sports because you're uncoordinated, being overwhelmed by noise, by sound, by smell. In a little kid, they start crying and melt down. In an adult, they withdraw and get depressed.
a lot of adults have no idea that they have Asperger's syndrome, but they really do think that there's something definitely wrong with them, that nobody likes them, that they're not accepted. Do a lot of Asperger's syndrome people think about committing suicide?
Well, here's the challenge, is that not everyone who has Asperger's is diagnosed. I don't know of any studies. I've never found a specific study that quantifies suicide. I do have in my books multiple studies that quantify being bullied and picked on and depression, and it's very, very common for teenagers, especially with Asperger's, to be highly depressed. It's almost a universal trait that they go through anxiety and depression. I've written many, many newsletters and other sections and books on that. It's classic that they say that, 85% of all kids with Asperger's are really bullied very, very badly in junior high and high school. And if you're constantly being bullied, that's going to lead to depression right there. Most every person I've ever talked to who's an adult in their 20s, in their 30s, in their 50s, I've asked them, I said, did you have a tough time in junior high and high school? And they said, yeah, it was the most miserable time in my life. And other people says, oh, high school was so wonderful. Oh, can you imagine, this was the best time of my life. Unfortunately, a lot of people with Asperger's, high school and junior high are the worst times of their entire life. And that's, you can imagine what that leads to. Now, does that lead to suicide? Yes, sometimes it does. But I don't have specific quantified data on that.
Is it hard to find doctors and therapists that really know a lot about the Asperger's syndrome?
It's getting much, much, much better. Asperger's wasn't even, a diagnosed label. It wasn't even a characteristic that showed up in the, psychological journals 20 years ago. So it's relatively new, but because there's two things that are helping. One is autism is becoming ubiquitously discussed and known.
BBSRadio.com. All right, we're back on air. And sorry, there was a lot of telecommunications going on. This is time for it, believe it or not. But we do have Craig back. So, Craig, we left off with you explaining a little bit more about, the children versus teens versus adult as they change and they go through their years of development, how it does change with them. And we were talking about mm-hmm. teens and how they get bullied a lot. And
mm-hmm.
one of the biggest things that I've heard, lately, and I don't listen to the news a lot because it just doesn't do a thing for me, is how there are many, many children in high school and now grade school being bullied on the Internet.
Cyberbullying.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about having a child with, the Asperger's syndrome and how that affects them, just in general.
Well, one of the things is that children who get bullied, the average kid, a lot of kids get bullied, they get teased a little bit in school. The challenge you have with kids with Asperger's is they really are so kind of socially clueless, they really don't know how to handle the bullying at all. And many bullies are socially almost the top of the pecking order in the school. They're the jocks, they're the popular kids. And one of the challenges you get into is the kid with Asperger's, if he's a sixth or seventh grader, if he gets bullied a lot and gets upset enough, what he starts to do is he will then perhaps try to hit the kid who's bullying him or say something, and the next thing you know, it's most of the time it's the kid who has Asperger's who ends up getting in trouble and getting suspended because the bully is so savvy about how the system works. The bully is, is so astute to the whole social skills and the whole social working that the teachers admire the bullies a lot of times. They're the highest, the high pecking order in the school. So they look at this, quiet kid, this geeky kid, all of a sudden he causes a fight, he starts punching somebody, and, the bully says, I didn't do anything, he's just crazy. And next thing you know, who gets suspended? So what's really difficult is these kids with Asperger's really don't know how to defend themselves. And one thing that's just terrible, this affects really a way that a lot of girls get kind of bullied, is cyberbullying, where it practically goes viral. I mean, it's bad enough when one kid says something to you, comes up to you in the hallway and says, hey, you smell. It's another when it's being sent as text messages on cell phones and it goes viral and there's, 500 messages get sent out in a half an hour and the whole entire school is aware of these nasty kind of comments being made to you, or a girl looks at her email and she's got dozens of email messages in there. They're like, nobody wants to be your friend. We all hate you. We all think you're fat and ugly. And, getting this in writing and getting this, showing up as text messages on your phone, having it posted on Facebook pages. I mean, this really starts to get to the point where, it gets to the point where kids have no idea how to even fight that.
I mean, you hear it, how teenagers have taken their own lives because they had been bullied for so long and so much, and they just can't take it anymore. So that's why I was asking. The other question, I'm sure a lot of the listeners may want to know, is this hereditary by some chance?
Yeah, okay. Definitely, because I did my background is a market researcher, and I've done a couple of very large studies, and I asked people, I said, do you have any relatives, any direct relatives who also have Asperger's, meaning a sibling, a mother or father, a grandparent, or say a first cousin? And I found about, 25 or 30% of the people said yes. Well, that's really pretty staggering when you have almost 30%. Let's see, if your son has Asperger's, well, 30% of the parents are telling me that there's another close relative with Asperger's also. So it's pretty obvious that, yeah, there's absolutely kind of a genetic characteristic to this, which in a way kind of makes sense because it's sort of the way your brain is wired. Therefore, genetics, play a part in it.
What about, there are many, many different groups out there, Craig, that people can get into. What should parents look for if they're looking for a support group, and is there any kind of traps or anything that they might fall into if they're not careful?
I don't think there's any I've never heard of really traps or something. Let me just say, if you personally have or think you have Asperger's, or if you have a loved one with Asperger's, nothing is more beneficial than joining an Asperger's support group. They are everywhere. If you can physically go to one in your area, and there's a ton in Southern California where I live. I go to a whole bunch in L.A. and Orange County and Irvine area. If you can actually go to them, a lot of them meet like once a month or something. If you can actually go there, it's extraordinarily supportive. There's a whole bunch of other parents exactly like you. You can share your stories. One of the really good ones that I go to that meets in Orange County, which is the county between San Diego County and Los Angeles County, they meet. And they just meet in a restaurant, an IHOP restaurant, and all the kids go. There's like a dozen kids who are all of Asperger's, and they just love it. The kids, it's a time when they can meet and get together. There's other groups that meet where the kids go out and they will go to movies, or they'll play something called anime, and excuse my complete ignorance about how video games work, but anime is like hot and big in Asperger's groups in Southern California. Young adults get together. There's several groups down here where there's a bunch of young adults get together who are in their, say, 20s or early 30s, and they get together and they just play video games together, and there's all kinds of meetup groups. I have a page that I, my, a web page, a newsletter which I send out, that lists exactly how you find all these support groups, because there's a ton of them, but they're a little bit hard to find sometimes, but there's great lists of them. And it's real easy to find this webpage of mine. It's called aspergerssociety.org/support.htm. So aspergerssociety.org/support.htm. And if you go to that page, what it does, it lists meetup.com, and it lists all these other places where you can find, how do you find support groups in your area, whether you're in the U.S., the U.K., Australia, basically all over the world. They've got listings for all the places you can go to. Most universities now have some type of Asperger's groups. So if you're a young adult, if there's any major university near you, almost for sure, if you contact like kind of the student groups there, you can find an Asperger's group that meets. But it's extremely beneficial to be around other people where you can just, you know, explain your issues, where they can be supportive, where they can give you advice. And if you have Asperger's, everybody needs a friend. Maybe you don't need 100 friends, but everybody needs at least one good friend. And a lot of these people with Asperger's, where they've met good friends is in Asperger's support groups. And, you know, who's a better friend for somebody with Asperger's than somebody else with Asperger's? They really can understand each other. They are very kind to each other. They don't, you know, they're not going to, each one has the same social deficits, so that they don't use nuance and intonation in their voice when they communicate. They communicate very overtly and very bluntly, which is perfect. They communicate really well together. They speak the same language. So in that regard, I strongly suggest that everybody try to actually go to a physical meeting of an Asperger support group. And if you're too far away from one, you live in, I mean, I've had people say, I live in Montana, I can't find one. Join one online, because at least then you'll get a dialogue with other people, and there's tons of them online. Yahoo has a bunch of groups. You can find them on Facebook, too.
But you also have a blog, and you write a newsletter, because I get them, and they're very, very informative. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest that people go to your website and, you know, sign up for the blog, or if they have questions, you know, send them to you so they can get mm-hmm. an answer for them. And then get the newsletter sent out to them, because it's very, very informative, because I read every single one of them. The other thing, when it comes to children and education, shouldn't they have an individual program?
Versus group training?
Yes.
It depends. Because I've asked a bunch of parents that, actually quite recently, at a support group I went to, there's, you know, in a way, the biggest problem, the biggest deficit that's going to hurt somebody with Asperger's long term is a lack of social skills. And in a way, group therapy, like this, for kids, it's called play therapy. For adults, it's, you know, you're 30, they don't really want to call it play therapy. But if you're 30, they, you know, kind of call it social skills training, but it's basically the same thing. For kids, let's say you have play therapy, and what they do is they get a bunch of kids together, and they literally say, gee, here's Johnny enters the room. What's appropriate behavior? What do you do when somebody enters the room? Gee, you look up. You make eye contact. You are polite. You say hello. You don't have to explain this to the average kid. A neurotypical kid, or, you know, somebody who doesn't have autism, this is not something that you have to train or teach the average 10-year-old. But a kid with Asperger's, when somebody walks in the room, they don't look up. They don't say hello. They don't make eye contact. They ignore them. I mean, they are so socially clueless that they basically have to be taught, what do you do to be polite when somebody gives you a gift? What do you say? They literally say, because one of the challenges you have with kids with Asperger's is they tend to have a subject that they are passionate about, which is great, but the challenge with that is that's like the only thing they want to talk about, whether it's, you know, outer space exploration or whether it's rock collecting or what have you. And literally what they do in a lot of these social skills and play therapy classes is they explain to kids how long you can talk about your subject before you stop. And they go, you can talk about it for 1 minute, or you can say five sentences. Then you have to ask the other person, what are you interested in? And you have to allow them to talk for like 2 minutes. Then you can go back to your subject. Then you have to stop and you have to say, tell me more about your subject. And they literally write these things down. It's a script. They teach them, tell me more about fill in the blank. Because kids with Asperger's don't even realize that they dominate conversations and they never let another person get a word in edgewise. So sometimes, in my opinion, I think the best therapy is a combination of one-on-one therapy along with some group skills, because it's almost like basketball. You can have a one-on-one coach who can explain to you kind of how to shoot and how to move. You know, he goes out with you one-on-one on the court. But ultimately, you want to be in a game, because until you're in a game with 10 players, you really don't get to play the game. You really don't get to practice. So the group training really allows you to practice. The one-on-one, I think, really can nail down for you in particular, what are you weak on and what should you learn and what you need to practice.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also have a list that you provide for the parents, or basically anybody, of the agencies that in case the school is giving them problems.
Mm.
You know, so I think that's real important that the parents know that, because there are schools that do not accept a lot of things because, like, who are you to tell them that there's something other than what they're telling you wrong with your child is wrong with your child. So you
mm-hmm.
have a list. Is it on your website? Do they get it in an email?
No, it's not really on my website. Basically, in my book, after I wrote my initial book, my first book was the Asperger's Syndrome Survival Guide, and I got so many emails and so many questions about school problems that in my next book, the Asperger's Syndrome Guide for Teens and Young Adults, there is a massively huge section on school, and if you happen to have that book, it starts on page kind of the information resources, which are basically who you can complain to. It kind of starts on page 182 and goes on for like 10 or 15 pages, and it lists things like in the Office of Special Education Programs, the National Information Center for Children and Youth with Disabilities, you know, all these kind of things, you know, technical assistance for parent centers, the Alliance, and it lists their address, all their phone numbers, their websites, their email addresses, because there is one law in the United States called Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which people always refer to as the IDEA.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it says is if you're under 18, once you're over 18, you're kind of out of luck. But if you're under 18, what it says is if you have a disability, and Asperger's and autism are considered disabilities under this act, if you have a disability, schools are legally required because of this federal law to make accommodations so that you can get an appropriate education, so you can still get educated. People tend to think of this as, gee, if a kid is in a wheelchair, the school has to make accommodations by putting in ramps or providing him with a school bus with a lift. But it works just as well for kids with Asperger's and autism. I don't know what state everyone else is in, but in California, where I live, the state's so far in debt that they're constantly cutting the school budgets. So one of the challenges that people have is resources that they were able to get even a couple of years ago are now being cut. Special training, special teachers, special skill sets, instructions, they're all being just eliminated. And what schools will tell parents, and I hear this all the time in emails, and is that, gee, the school said that they just don't have the resources. Well, unfortunately for the school, that's not a legally acceptable excuse. The IDEA requires that schools make appropriate and reasonable accommodations to provide the educational assistance that every disabled kid needs, mm-hmm. irrespective of what that is. And so the challenge you get into here is that schools want, unfortunately, some, not all, and not even most, but a minority of the schools want to do as little as they possibly can. And they force the parents to sort of fight them, you know, to get the resources they need. And so my book kind of is a, it's kind of like a battle plan of this is exactly who you call, this is exactly what you say, this is exactly what you do. And what I have been told by, you know, countless emails is when people do follow these directions and they do write to these agencies and they do copy the superintendent of schools and they copy the principal and they copy a million people on all these letters, the schools typically back down almost immediately because the schools do know that they're legally required to provide these services. And it is not a legally acceptable excuse to say, well, we just don't have the resources. The schools are required by law to come up with them.
That's very important for people to know. Craig, we're really out of time, so can you please give out your website and then name your books real quick, and then we're going to have to say bye.
Okay. My website is AspergersSociety.org, and I have three books currently, the Asperger's Syndrome Survival Guide, the Asperger's Syndrome Guide for Teens and Young Adults, and the one that's just recently come out is Thriving in Adulthood with Asperger's Syndrome. And those books are orderable off my website and also totally available on Amazon.com.
Great. Craig, it's been very, very enlightening, and I'm sure that a lot of the listeners appreciate the subject because a lot of them really do not know what to do with their kids at this point. So I thank you very much for taking time and being on the show and sharing your experiences and your knowledge with myself and the listeners.
It's a pleasure.
And again, thank you very much. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a safe weekend now. Don't overdo anything, but have fun and take care. And we'll talk next week. Bye now.